This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening, and let's clear something up right now.
In Iran, we don't have homosexuals like in your country. We don't have that in our country.
It was 2007 when then-President of Iran Mahmoud Ahmadinejad stood before the student body at Columbia University and insisted that there was no homosexuality in Iran. The speech was a test of the college's belief in free speech. The campus was sharply divided over whether the Iranian president should speak at all, but when he did, his bizarre candor revealed something worth knowing about the then leadership of Iran. This understanding is perhaps why there has been so much change in Iran and why the U.S. relationship with Iran has changed. But colleges seem to have a difficult time with free speech these days, something President Obama addressed at a talk at the University of Iowa.
I've heard some college campuses where they don't want to have a guest speaker who is too conservative, or they don't want to read a book if it has language that is offensive to African Americans. Anybody who comes to speak to you and you disagree with, you should have an argument with them. But you shouldn't silence them by saying you can't come because, you know, I'm too sensitive to hear what you have to say.
The president was objecting to what he called coddling of oversensitive youth and a silencing of voices. And if silenced means being disinvited by a school after being asked to speak, then these people have been silenced. Condoleezza Rice, former Secretary of State, Christine Lagarde, head of the International Monetary Fund, and Ray Kelly, former New York City police chief. When the issue is racism, Israel and Palestine, abortion or religion, the hot buttons on campus get pushed and controversy can mean events get canceled. How does this happen, and who defends free speech on college campuses? Mark Landy is a professor of political science at Boston College. John Corvino is professor and chair of the philosophy department at Wayne State University. Both John and Mark found themselves in the middle of this conflict between free speech versus correct speech. Is there still an ethos of free speech on campuses today? Professor Landy is not so sure.
I couldn't be less satisfied at the moment. I've been in higher education all my life. And the change that's taken place from an atmosphere of challenge of students, of faculty, to an atmosphere where the greatest concern seems to be that people shouldn't get upset. Well, of course you should get upset at a university.
Professor Corvino, do you think students and administrators at colleges are inclined to be coddled in the ways in which free speech issues are resolved, as President Obama once said?
I think that that might be a little bit strong, and I think a lot depends on the circumstances. You know, Professor Landy is right that students ought to be challenged, but some of this conversation that we're having about, you know, how much comfort do we need to promote? How much pressure do we need to put forth? I mean, that's all part of the free speech ethos on campus. So I think that that actually is still healthy, and the fact that campuses are having this kind of conversation is evidence of that.
Although, was that your first response when you were told that you were disinvited to the campus at Providence College?
Well, I mean, again, like I said, every situation is unique. But here's what happened there. A group of nine different departments invited me to speak. An administrator summarily just decided, no, we're going to disinvite him. He just cited some policy that, in fact, wasn't in place on the campus. And as a result of that, the faculty senate, the students, everybody started getting together and talking about why that was wrong. And eventually I was invited to speak. So there we saw actually the process ultimately working out.
Although you're an unusual case, a lot of times the speaker decides, forget about it, this is ridiculous, and they decide to go away, and the silencing is what the net effect is, Professor Corvino.
Well, I mean, if you want to call that silencing. So, I think that disinviting somebody is a strong action. It should not be taken lightly. I think there are very rare circumstances where a person who's been duly invited ought to be disinvited. But when a person is invited and there's pushback to that and the person says, well, hey, I just don't want to do this, that's the person's free decision as well.
See, I have a somewhat different outlook. I don't view the case that John's describing in such a positive light. It seems to me that there is very, very little room for pushback when a speaker is invited. I mean, there really has to be, I think, some palpable evidence that the speaker is going to incite trouble or is so far outside civil discourse. It seems to me as long as the speaker can be counted on to involve and take part in relatively civil discourse, there's no room for pushback. People don't have to come.
What was your experience and your issue, Mark Landy, that most disturbed you here?
Yeah, I think the fact that this would even go to the faculty senate, that this was somehow I don't know Professor Corvino, but he sounds like a reasonable fellow. Therefore, he passes the test of who can speak at a university. And the fact that there are all these procedures in place to take issue with an invitation to a speaker is really evidence of the closing of the university's mind.
Why did you have to defend the decision to invite Condoleezza Rice to your campus?
Yeah, well, okay. So there was a complication there because she was both being offered an honorary degree and being invited to speak. And so various members of the opposition to inviting Secretary of State Rice took different positions. I could at least understand a pushback about having her receive an honorary degree. That's something of an open question, although she was the sitting Secretary of State and the most prominent Black woman in America. I have to say, in our case, that although it received an enormous amount of publicity and there was a lot of discord on campus, our administration was absolutely forthright. There was no procedure for reconsidering Secretary of State Rice. So I was very proud of our president and our administration for simply sticking up. I was disappointed that a lot of faculty felt they had to make a gesture. They turned their back on Secretary Rice when she spoke. But that's within their rights.
Professor Corvino, what was your issue?
At Providence College?
Yes.
Well, I speak on gay rights issues. Providence College is a Catholic university, and administration there was worried that didn't fit with the Catholic values of the university to have me speak. But again, I was duly invited by a group of 9 different units or departments. There should have been more speech going on there before they made that decision.
To both of you, is there an ethos, a counter ethos, perhaps, among young people who grew up with Facebook and sort of digital social media that encourages their own beliefs and allows them to live a little more in a bubble than perhaps the three of us did growing up, that young people have a set of blinders on regarding hot button and touchy issues, and that particularly among liberal college students, that there's a lack of tolerance for other viewpoints on college campuses, and that's partly what we're seeing here. Professor Corvino?
I think it's certainly a danger. I mean, when people are accustomed to expressing their views in sound bites in controlled environments like Facebook or, you know, Twitter, where they can control their followers and things like that, there's the danger of not being accustomed to the kind of healthy dialogue. That's yet another reason why we at universities, when we have this opportunity, have a real responsibility to try to draw people out of that and say, look, we need to have a larger conversation here. I also think that can be oversaid or overemphasized. I mean, these kinds of platforms have also enabled people in some cases to be able to share differing views. I mean, I have friends across the political spectrum on my Facebook page. They, you know, disagree sharply on certain issues, and sometimes that can be a healthy exercise of free speech.
Professor Landy?
Yeah, I finally have something really cheerful to say, which is that the vast bulk of college students that I, at least the ones that I deal with, are remarkably open-minded. And this furor has really been created, I think, by, first of all, relatively small groups of activist students who do not represent the modal student. And more insidiously, the proliferation of a bureaucracy on our campuses. Their careers depend on their ability to be very active in controlling speech. They're there initially to deal with hate speech, but of course there isn't that much hate speech on a lot of these campuses, so they look to expand their portfolio. There's too much administration on our campuses and not enough freedom.
You think there's police, speech police on campus who are responsible for hate speech and, you know, use of inappropriate racial language?
Yes. There is a bureaucracy whose professional advancement depends on really finding cases to deal with. And so they expand their portfolios, and I dare say they often inspire students to create issues that would, in the normal course of things, would never arise.
Professor Corvino?
Once again, I worry that that might be overstated. I mean, certainly there are people who expand the notion of hate speech way too far, that anything, you know, that makes them uncomfortable that they disagree with suddenly becomes hate speech. You know, there are thin-skinned people in every element of society. But I also think that, you know, some of what we're referring to here as pushback, as criticism, is yet a further example of people exercising their free speech. When people say things that are insensitive, that marginalize people on campuses, and other people call that out, that's a healthy exercise of free speech as well.
John Corvino is professor and chair of the philosophy department at Wayne State University. Mark Landy is professor of political science at Boston College. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks,
John.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.